Pop the We might say the meanest things. Pop the Sometimes we're not much company. There's no rearranging. Our writing remains the same. We remain the same. And as far as we're concerned, Pop the You belong to us. Pop the
And they said it wouldn't last. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the Pop Dose podcast. My name is Dave Lifton. First off, thanks to all of you who downloaded our first show. The numbers were absolutely incredible. And the show is also now available at the iTunes Music Store, so you can subscribe to the feed there. And also download the first episode if you missed it last month. Just type Pop Dose into their search engine, and it will come up. And joining me again today are my co-hosts Jeff Giles and Jason Hare. Gentlemen?
Jeff, go ahead.
Oh, is that us?
Are you guys gentlemen?
Well, I was waiting for Jeff to say the catchphrase of the show.
Sup, fuckers?
It sounded like on this end, it sounded like you said, set up, fuckers. Did you say, is that our new line or is it sup? Did I hear it incorrectly?
It's still sup, fuckers. Your ears aren't working.
Oh.
I thought he said soup, fuckers.
Soup. Fuckers! Now that's a TV show name.
For I can see the FX network doing that.
Welcome to Soup Fuckers. That's an awkward
oh
show.
My God.
Today,
just in terms of comfort, I think I'd rather have gazpacho fuckers instead. You know.
Like, yeah, so you thought the scene in American Pie was awkward.
No, you don't want to say gazpacho fuckers. Then that limits your entire series to one show.
Yeah, but soup fuckers would be painful, man.
But well, what if the soup is cooled down? Or what if it's a thick soup?
Then it's gazpacho.
You know, I mean, no, I didn't say cold. I said cooled down. Like, it's like for example, if I had to fuck a soup. I love that the podcast has gone here already. If I had to fuck a soup, hold on, let me stroke my goatee and think about it. If I had to fuck a soup, I would much rather fuck, say, a bowl of New England clam chowder than a bowl of Manhattan clam chowder. Just do you understand what I mean? Because one is creamy and one is not. You'd rather fuck a creamy soup because there's more insulin. I can't do it.
Why don't you get your wife to help you set this up in the kitchen? Let's see. Let's see how this works. Well, let's see if Manhattan is better than...
This is a new series for Pop Dose. It's not maybe it's not a TV series. Maybe it's a video series for podcast.
I'm just envisioning French on you. with getting through the croutons and the cheese.
The cheese.
Soup fuckers. I think Malchus might have a connection at the Food Network. We should
propose this show. We should pitch this.
Yeah.
It would be much more entertaining than anything that Rachel Ray's ever done.
Can you imagine this pitch meeting? Okay. So it's called Soup Fuckers, and wait a minute, hear me out, people. It's about these guys, and they fuck soup. And just leave it at that and just kind of sit back and do that thing where you sit back and just wait for it to hit them and be like, oh, yeah, right? Yep, I told you, soup fuckers. That's the way it works, boys.
Why do I have the feeling that Anthony Bourdain has already tried this at some point in his life?
Oh, boy.
Tom Colicchio is doing it right now.
So, Pop Dose podcast listeners, weigh in on your favorite soup to fuck in the comments.
Have we pissed off and grossed everybody out enough?
Well, definitely the latter.
Yeah.
Yeah, the latter. I think they're all gone.
And now that these digressions are out of the way, we are recording this on October 24th, a week before Halloween, and this, I guess, will be online on the 30th. So Jason thought that in honor of Halloween, we should talk about the things that scared us as children. So that's our topic for today, and as a result of him coming up with the idea, we're going to let Jason start it off.
You're tuning in to Jason
Hare. Okay. I did come up with the idea, but I didn't plan what I was going to say, so this might wind up embarrassing the hell out of me. As a kid, I was petrified of E.T. Yeah, that laugh shows me I'm all alone on this one. It was E.T. came out in what, 82 or 83? Yep. Okay, so I was born in 77, so by my math that puts me at like, what, 2-3 years old. So I, that's a joke. I know that I wasn't 2 or 3 years old. My dad had heard about the movie and was like, let's go see E.T. So my dad and I went to see it together. And, you know, I was okay with the first half of the movie. It wasn't so much... It wasn't so much the beginning or E.T. so much, but when he when they had that whole hospital scene, you know, where they build that little hospital outside the house and they quarantine everybody and they're putting the EKG things on him and everything's very sterile. I think that is a frightening scene. I think that's a really scary scene, and I hid and closed my eyes and cried, and of course my dad, being the sadistic fucker that he is, wasn't like, okay, we can go. He was probably like, shut up, I want to see the rest of this movie. And I was just absolutely freaked out about the movie. And so we left, and he's crying because he loved the movie, thought it was brilliant. I'm crying because I don't know how I'm going to ever go to sleep. And he's like, at the end of it, he's like, your mother has to see this. And so I had to go back and see it a second time with my mom, which I spent the entire movie like nestled into her shoulder, you know, with my head nestled into her shoulder or neck, trying not to look at it. And
you had an au pair. Why couldn't they just leave you home and go see it without you? Your dad is sadistic, man. And I can't get over the fact that E.T. made him cry.
That made him cry.
That's the scariest part of the story for me.
Well, it was a more innocent time, I guess.
Having met your dad, I can't imagine him crying about a foam alien.
a what? A foam alien. Alien. Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
I thought you said a faux malian, and I was like, what, that's an awesome term. I don't know what that means, but
a fake man alien.
A fake man alien. Faux malian.
That's what I thought he said too first. So.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Well, Jeff, the father of mine that you met in 2009 is presumably different than the father you met that you would have met in 1982. I still agree, though, that it was pretty sadistic to bring me back to see it the second time. But the fallout from me being freaked out from that movie, there were a few of them. One, I was convinced E.T. was hiding in my closet. Now, I had friends who liked to pretend that E.T. was hiding in their closet. They liked to pretend that E.T. I was petrified of thinking that E.T. was in my closet. We had a Labrador Retriever who was about 120 pounds. And for, I don't know how long, but for a long time when I went to bed, he had to sleep on the bed with me until I fell asleep, and then he would eventually, they would get him off the bed or whatever. But he had to, like, he was, like, protecting me. But it got, that seems like a fairly natural response to being scared of a movie. But whenever we drove past the movie theater that said E.T. in the billing, I closed my eyes. I had to cover my eyes as we drove past it. And well after the movie was out of that theater, I had to close my eyes. And no joke, in the TV guide, you remember, you know, Entertainment Tonight? That was abbreviated in the TV guide as E.T. Totally freaked the hell out of me. You know, like, and, you know, the movie theater that we went to see it was kind of in a roundabout, an offshoot part of our town. And so if we ever went in that direction, I would, like, for 5 minutes, I'd be like, oh, my God, we're gonna come up on the theater. We're going to see the theater. Oh, what am I going to do? I would close my eyes and whatever. And I remember when E.T. came out on VHS, I was I was significantly older. I don't remember how old I was. But, well, maybe I wasn't significantly older. Maybe it was, like, 7 or 8 or whatever. But my dad went out and bought it. And I was older then, but still relatively upset. So that's my E.T. story. I do not own it on DVD. I think I did buy it for my dad at one point.
You're getting it for Christmas.
What'd you say?
Yeah, have you watched it since then? Can you watch it now?
This is like a great idea for a post.
Right. Just, and for the post, it would be a video post, just a video camera set up on me and like my petrified face when it got to that. Yeah. I have,
I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna send you a case of Reese's Pieces that you have to eat while you're watching the movie.
While listening to Metal Machine music.
Well, get me some EKG things too, and you can put them on me. Right. And, you know, I have seen the movie since then, and it does not. Do the same thing that it did then, but. You know, and it's funny because I've told this story before, and some people understand it, and some people are like, what are you talking about? You know, E.T. was awesome. That was a great movie. I had a friend who was so excited. At the very end of the movie, there's a rainbow, and she was like, she loved the whole movie, and then that was just like the icing on the cake for her, being our age of, you know, three or four, whatever we were. And, I was like, there was a rainbow, because at that point all I was looking at was the back of a theater, you know, because I had totally turned myself the other way in the theater. But given that I've gotten all these different responses from this, I still maintain that that scene where he gets sick and all pallid and you know, they put the EKGs on him and put him in that weird environment, I still think that is a really scary scene.
Well, you know, they probably wouldn't put it in a kids' movie today.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I don't watch a lot of kids' movies these days, but...
Well, you know about all the controversy about Where the Wild Things Are.
I haven't heard about the controversy. I've heard that kids... I read an article that said that people were bored by it.
Initially there were reports that kids were crying, and, you know, there's just all this hand-wringing about whether or not it's too dark for kids, you know?
Yeah, I read the review in EW or said something that, like, you know, surely it's not any scarier than what kids might come up with in their dreams.
Yeah, which was the problem for you, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you guys remember that scene? You must remember that scene.
Yeah.
Am I? And totally honest, you can rip me apart. Is that a scary scene, or is it just me?
I'm 8 years older than you, so that's a little bit different, you know.
But, fair enough.
But it's funny because you know, like Spielberg, he spoke about all the time about how like nothing as a kid scared him more than Disney cartoons. And so he just put that into the movies, and there's, you know, it's funny because he builds up the tension brilliantly. Like I think it's the Peter Coyote character. Whenever he's shot from the from looking up at him as a child would see him, and that's done intentionally. You know, so he's got things in there. You know, he knew what he was doing. Maybe you might have been a little too young to really get it, to freak you out for life. Right. Well, although that could also be because you're a pussy. but, you know, Spielberg was very intentional in his approach to that movie in terms of creating an amount of tension in there and fear, because, you know, like so much of his best stuff is about the fears of children.
I think Peter Coyote is scary from any angle.
Yeah, it's true. But Jeff, were there any movies that scared you as a kid that would seem kind of crazy? Because I remember there was a time in my life when I couldn't watch The Wizard of Oz.
Really?
Because, like, yeah, the Wicked Witch of the West and the Winged Monkeys just scared the crap out of me. And this was after I had seen it several times. Because, you know, like, it was on, like, once a year.
I do remember that, yeah. You know what's funny is my daughter is obsessed with The Wizard of Oz. She's going to be Dorothy for Halloween next week. And it all started because my mom sent her the book and the movie last year, so she was almost three when she got it, and my wife and I were a little reluctant to show it to her, and you know, we read her the book and she really got into it, and we started reading all the books in the series, and so I forget how long we waited, but we eventually showed her the movie, fully expecting her to
flip out at the monkeys
or the witch. But no, she thought that the witch was hysterical. She doesn't care about the monkeys. No part of the movie scares her. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that my daughter is tougher than Dave Lifton.
I gotta say, I think your daughter dressing as Dorothy for Halloween is adorable. But I'm not sure if it's going to beat that chicken costume she wore 2 years ago.
It's not just her going as Dorothy. She's going to make my son is going to be 2 next month. She's making him go as Toto.
Oh, I love it.
She's making my wife's mother go as the Scarecrow, and she's making my father-in-law go as the Cowardly Lion.
And what are you going as? Just a normal drunk douchebag.
Yeah, man holding camera on sidewalk.
Man holding camera? That's pretty yeah. boring.
So basically your daughter didn't give nothing to the Tin Man.
She wants me to be the Tin Man.
Okay. I was making an America reference there. Oz didn't do nothing to the Tin Man.
Oh, I totally didn't get it.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's because you're Sorry. Assholes. Wait, the King that. Of Mellow Gold didn't get an America reference. Jesus Christ.
I just have, like, you know, the usual songs. The only America album I own is their Christmas record, which I will still go on record with saying that is a great album. Well, okay. It's not a great album, but there's a few really good songs. Their version of Winter Wonderland is easily one of my favorite holiday songs. Maybe that'll wind up on the Christmas mixtape I'm doing for Pop Dose.
Okay.
Because I genuinely do like that song.
Cue sad horn noise.
The Wizard of Oz did not freak me out as a kid. Just wanted to say that. I was... that didn't freak me out. It was just E.T.
My dad used to talk about one time in New York City, they were somewhere, probably out for the theater, and they saw Margaret Hamilton.
Oh, yeah?
And they said all they did for that movie was give her a hat.
Aww. Did you guys know I just reviewed the Blu-ray, the big
yeah.
deluxe?
Yeah,
I love There's that review.
There are hours and hours and hours of supplemental footage, and there's an interview with her where she talks about getting the call from her agent.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah, because that was on the Angela Lansbury back in 90.
Yeah, exactly.
Did that special on CBS or something, which made sense because she was you know, heavily on, you know, big in the network right then for Murder, She Wrote. Yeah, she hosted this whole one-hour retrospective, which I thought was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. This is exactly what I'm talking about. It's in the box. But her agent calls her and says, they want you to come in for the Wizard of Oz. And she gets all excited. And she says, well, what part is it? What do they want me to do? And he says, the Wicked Witch. And, you know, she's telling this to an auditorium full of people, and they all laugh because she's clearly disappointed that this is the role that they're calling her in for. And she pauses for a minute, and then she says, and then came the worst part where he said, what else would they be calling you in for?
That was great. Yeah, that was very funny. And
there are two adult women roles in the whole thing.
Yeah. you have to watch like when you watch the clip do it, she has this great like deadpan look on her face after mm-hmm. she says the agent going, well, yes, what else? And it's just, I mean, she really had she had good comic timing. She didn't scare me. That movie didn't. I don't, you know, some people can really remember the first time they saw that movie. I can't. I remember when I was about 13, which was right when that TV special that Angela Lansbury hosted came out. I really started watching that movie a lot. Like, I really enjoyed it and was into finding all these interesting things about it. When I get a Blu-ray player, that'll probably be one of the first ones I buy.
As much as we all like to make fun of Jason for being a pussy, because it is so much fun,
I make it very easy on you guys. You have to admit.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, as a kid, I wasn't that much different. You know, as you just heard me talk about being scared by the Wizard of Oz. You know, I think pretty much everything scared me at some point. You know, like if something bad would happen to somebody that I knew, I would like then be afraid to do that. Like I remember one time I was at the mall and somebody. There was like somebody got caught on the escalator, you know, and then I would be afraid to go on an escalators for like months, or like a classmate would get bit by a dog and I wouldn't go to a friend's house if they had a dog, you know.
That seems fairly natural.
Fairly legitimate fears. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Escalators are kind of scary.
Yeah, but like, you know, it was like, you know, insects never scared me like the way like spiders. I was never like freaked out by that. I think it was like too much early exposure to Charlotte's Web or something maybe. But
I totally thought you just said incest. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I thought you said incest never scared me. All right, anyway, sorry, insects. They didn't scare you as a kid.
But mostly growing up, you know, like in the late 70s, early 80s, when Jason was being scared by E.T., you know, like, because, like I said, I'm like 8 years older than you. Between the Iran hostage situation and the escalation of the Cold War, I was pretty sure that like the Ayatollah was going to come to my house and take me hostage, or that I was going to like die in a nuclear war and stuff. And it was like 82 or something, or 83. You had Reagan going on the radio and doing his like weekly address, and to make his to do his mic test, he said, "I've just signed legislation that'll that outlawed Russia forever. The bombing begins in 5 minutes." But it turns out that went on over the air.
Wow.
And he just like, it was just like a little joke he made, and like that was like, everybody's like, "Whoa, my God, we have a president who's joking about bombing Russia." You know, and that was like kind of how I became interested in politics in general, because like I'm like in fourth or fifth grade, like only one or two of my friends really cared about those things. But like I was like petrified. I did not even think that I was like even gonna make it to high school, and even like beyond that in college, think, you know, things were escalating at times. You know, we by college, Glasnost and Perestroika could pretty much come into play, but like, you know, there was still, you know, Libya and, you know, Gaddafi and stuff like that. All that just like scared me, that I was just like, you know, everything was going to get blown up.
How many times did you go see Red Dawn?
Never.
Oh, that, you were scared that badly that you
You know, it just looked like a shitty movie.
You know, it's being remade now?
Yeah, I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah. This time, instead of the Russians, the Chinese are going to invade.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you wonder, like, if, like, a kid who was, like, 10 years old and, you know, on September 11th, if they were, like, going through the same thing, you know, like, you know, having to live with the specter of growing up under the specter of terrorism and stuff like that.
That's a great point. I don't think I've ever thought about that.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot more distractions now.
That's probably also true.
Possibly, yeah. It's like,
but then again, you know, the imagery from September 11th was a lot more readily available and repeated.
Yeah.
For kids to see, so that could either that could have one of two effects. I mean, that could either terrorize, not to use that word, sorry, but that could freak kids out further, or it could numb them to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either or, but you were going on your imagination.
Yeah, because like on the news every night, you'd see like this, when they talk about the hostage situation, you'd see like this really scary picture of Khomeini, and you know, just like with his like intense eyes and all that. He didn't like Gaddafi, you know, screaming, you know, pounding his fist in front of a microphone, or you know, Khomeini just like brooding and intense with, you know, like the huge white beard and the, you know, and the wrinkly face and stuff like that. And I guess Brezhnev was still the premier, and he had these like eyebrows that just looked like they were going to come alive and eat the rest of his face. You know, you know, it was very much imagination, but it was just, you know, that's what happens when I actually use my imagination. I end up scaring the crap out of myself.
Well, those guys, I think that the terror-inducing leaders of the past were definitely scarier looking. I mean, Gaddafi's up. Oh my God.
Now he's, you know, got a...
Now he looks like, yeah, Joan Rivers.
I was going to say John Oates, but...
He does look like John Oates. Yeah. Holy shit.
Just a scary looking dude.
Yeah.
But that's quite a heavy weight to have had on your shoulders as a kid.
I'm 35. I'm a little bit older than Jason, but I'm still younger than you. I remember, I think I was in, you know, fifth and sixth grade when Rambo was huge and Red Dawn was popular, and I had buddies who, you know, I was a Boy Scout, and everybody was wearing the camouflage pants and all that crap, but I don't know, I never really gave it too much thought. I thought Reagan was cool, just like all my friends did, but, you know, honestly, I think I am, and probably Jason too, we're part of a generation that had the luxury of not really having to think about politics at all until Bush was elected.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was just going to say that my household growing up was really a political free household.
Yeah, same here.
It was never mentioned. It was never discussed. My dad watched the news every night, and occasionally I would watch, and I was aware of the Ayatollah and Gaddafi and Libya and stuff like that, but anything more I knew about the Libyans was that they were delivering plutonium, so Michael J. Fox could go back to the future.
most of your understanding of world affairs through Michael J. Fox movies.
I got most of my politics from Bloom County, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. I was never into Bloom County.
Yeah, me neither.
But I, you know, like one of my really good friends was, and you know, who was also very politically aware. But yeah, it's interesting. Like you look at like getting our politics through movies. It's like you think of like Bond and how in the '60s that was, you know, like the James Bond. Like you know, the characters were the villains. Like Blofeld had a very Eastern European feel to him, or you know, or they were Russians and stuff. And like how that changed over the years. You know, to being the villains were Middle Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at, like how much more they reflected what was going on in the current day, even you know, like after the Cold War came to a close.
Yeah, it destroyed the action movie.
Yeah,
industry.
I think it also destroyed the Olympics.
That's right.
Because
it took away our reason to care about who won.
Yeah, it did. The breakup of the Soviet Union. It was no longer the big bad empire that was, you know, subsidizing these athletes and creating, you know, your Ivan Dragos, you know, and you know, we were perpetual underdogs in a lot of sports. Well, we still are in some respects, but now there's like, or now the best Russian athletes come here to train,
yeah,
you know, and we don't have that huge international rivalry with a country like we did back then. I mean, I guess to an extent China and stuff like that, but or you know, like if once in a while we're like paired up somewhere, like at the World Cup in 98 we were paired off against Iran and we had to play them and we actually lost in one of the most embarrassing moments in American soccer history, but I'm still not bitter about that at all.
Well, I guess the best we can hope for is that the Taliban is you know, practicing pole vaulting and shot putting in the caves where they're holed up.
Yeah, well, I guess you got to get... Well, you can't really practice pole vaulting in a cave. You got to figure they have some pretty damn low ceilings.
Good point.
You know, it's like now all the Soviet countries are individual countries, and apart from Ukraine, there's really not that much going on in world sport. I mean, apart from Russia and stuff. But it's just not the same. It doesn't mean the same thing. And especially, like, if you're talking about, like, Olympic hockey, and then, like, now it's all professionals anyway.
I'm staying quiet because I know nothing about any of this.
I was just about to say, like, from now on, like, we should make a rule that, like, we just, like, don't talk about sports on this podcast.
We can talk about sports. I just don't care about the Olympics. I've never paid any attention to them.
Okay.
I'll talk about football with you. And by football, okay. I mean real football, American football, not the stuff that you watch.
I watch both.
I'm just teasing you.
I watch neither.
Yeah, well, that's because you're a pussy.
That's true. I watch no sport.
When I think about the fall of the Iron Curtain, I just think about the movies, the way the movies changed. I think about True Lies and how that was kind of the fulcrum for that type of movie, where they, instead of the big bad Russians, they had they were terrorists, Middle Eastern terrorists in that movie, right?
I think so.
And I think people got pissed off about it. There were a lot of complaints from lobbying groups because of the way these guys were being portrayed.
Yeah, the terrorist, the de facto terrorist, has to be like the, you know, the de facto role for the Middle Eastern actor, just mm-hmm. as the just as, you know, the drug dealer or the cop was in the '80s for the African American actor.
<That's true.
laughs> It's like, how many cops did Wesley Snipes play?
Is this a quiz?
No, just curious. Think of how many times he played a cop in the movies.
Right.
You know. And you would think that even that would have kept him on the right side of the law. Might have learned something from it. But
apparently not so much.
And I've heard like some interviews with Middle Eastern actors who said that basically, like, if their agent says, "Yeah, we've got a part for you," and it's like, "What are you gonna play?" It's like, "Well, it's a terrorist." It's like, "No, I just won't do it."
Right.
No. Well, Jason and I know a couple of those guys.
Really?
Oh, which guys?
Well, Rahul and Amir.
That's true.
Amir, actually, I forget how long ago it was. I think it was right around 2002, maybe 2003. He had an audition for something. I want to say it was a commercial, but anyway, he had to kiss a camel. He had to pretend to kiss a camel.
God. That's just...
So there's your typecasting in a nutshell right there.
Sorry, he had to pretend to kiss a camel?
Mm-hmm. Huh. They must have been shooting it a certain way. I don't think he actually literally had to kiss the camel, but that was the...
I would have kissed the camel.
Unless he wanted to. Unless they had, like, a good chemistry and the camel was, like, waving him on, giving him the sign.
Right.
Amir's a method actor.
Right, or the camel was like, I really liked that last movie you did. You know, and then you're like, all right, I'll kiss the camel.
You know, I guess I didn't have quite the same threshold of fear as you guys did, because...
That's why I wanted you to go last.
I remember watching Poltergeist when I was like 7 Ooh. Or 8, and like, you remember the part at the end where the dead people start popping up out of the ground?
Yeah.
I was laughing.
Never seen it.
You've never seen Poltergeist?
I'm not into horror. I'm not into horror movies.
Wow.
With me, it was the scene where the guy pulled his face off.
Yeah, it was awesome.
For me, E.T. was a horror movie. So you can imagine that I didn't go any further into the genre, you know, than what I thought that was.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, hearing Spielberg making a horror movie must have, in Poltergeist, must have, Jason would hit under his covers for a week.
Oh, seriously. I still don't watch horror movies.
Wow.
I know, Michael Parr doesn't understand it, Kelly doesn't understand it, you know.
Oh, Kelly loves horror movies, I had no idea until October started.
Yeah, well, her and I think Michael Parr said he's watching, like, he's going through, like, a marathon of them.
Yeah, he did that a few weeks ago.
There hasn't been a horror... The only horror movie that ever scared me was Misery, and not because it was scary, but just the idea of being tied to a bed by a crazy lady.
Oh.
You know, speaking of scaring and horror movies, like, I remember, well, I guess it was 76 or so, seeing in the theater is the trailer for The Shining.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That might have been this, you know, with the blood in the elevator, that might have just, like... that. I know that scared the living crap out of me. The fact that I actually, to this day, remember seeing it in the theaters.
Yeah, that's true. The Shining is pretty scary. Those girls.
Yeah. Also known as the Watson
of
twins.
Of course, Jason doesn't know what we're talking about.
The Watson twins. No, I do. I've seen parts of The Shining. And I've seen the recut trailer. Have you guys seen that? The guy.
Don't they do it like a comedy?
They do it as like romantic comedy, like they have Salisbury Hill playing on it.
Yeah, I think I have seen that.
And you know, they have the announcer when he announces the name of the movie. He just announces it as Shining. That's great. We'll put that in the show notes.
I love the one where they recut the intro to Different Strokes like it's a horror movie.
Yes. It's like to catch a Predator or something like that.
Conrad Bain is going to molest these kids.
Yeah.
And all they had to do was change the music. It's so perfect.
Poor Conrad Bain. Just another thing where Conrad Bain can't catch a break.
Haven't you bumped into him at auditions?
I haven't. I bumped into, what's his name, Robert Vaughn? Is that who I'm thinking of? Robert Vaughn? Why do you guys know? Yeah, Robert Vaughn. I've auditioned with him a couple of times. Poor Conrad Bain. He was, I think he was actually, I don't know who I had this conversation with, but he was like a relatively respected, classically trained actor who then, you know, went to sitcom. And apparently back then, it was, I think he was sort of like a cautionary tale for other classically trained actors. Like they didn't want to, you know, I don't know if they called it a Conrad Bain to sell out to TV.
Oh, you pulled a Conrad Bain.
You pulled a Conrad Bain. Well, on Facebook, I have this photo of me when I was a little kid, probably about 2 or 3 years old, and I have my hair almost all parted to one side, and Matt Bolin said, ah, yes, you had the Conrad Bain. He's the only... And I've actually Googled Conrad Bain and haircut to see if that's like a term, but I think Matt brilliantly came up with it. And every time I look at pictures of myself from that era, I'm like, oh, I had the Conrad Bain.
At least you didn't have the Dana Plato.
Well, that would just have been weird. Or if I had the Todd Bridges, or the Gary Coleman, like those aren't.
Or the Charlotte Ray.
Charlotte Ray, yeah.
Charlotte Ray.
She had a bit of a career before she went on those shows too, didn't she? Mm-hmm. Wasn't she on Broadway or something like that?
I'm sure she was. And now I think the last time I saw her, she was doing like little.
She was playing BB Kings.
full circle.
They were both in Bananas. Charlotte Roy and Conrad Bain were both in Bananas.
That's years ago, though.
Yeah, no, that was years before Different Strokes. That was 71 or 72.
What was Bananas?
It was a Woody Allen movie.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about a play or something.
No.
Conrad Bain was in a Woody Allen movie?
Yeah, he had a bit part. He was a salesman who comes into a... Oh, no, he runs a company. Woody Allen starts off playing a professional products tester, and he tests a product that is made by Conrad Bain's company.
I have to see this now.
It's basically just any straight man will do in that scene. You know, it's just basically an opportunity for Woody to do like a lot of slapstick.
Bob Newhart was busy.
No, nothing ever happened to Bob Newhart. Things happened around him. This was like an opportunity for him to be just like have a basketball thrown into his face.
So I just looked on IMDb for Conrad Bain, and the last thing he did was in 96.
He died?
He's still alive.
The last thing he did in 1996 was breathe.
he reprised his role of Mr. Drummond on Fresh Prince. Which
oh
totally
God.
Makes sense. That totally makes sense if you think about it. But I guess he's... I mean, obviously he must be retired. He hasn't done anything since 96.
Yeah. How old is he?
Old.
103.
He was born in 1923.
Yeah, so he's 86.
Try and set up an interview with him. A Pop Dose interview with Conrad Bain.
Before the memory completely goes.
That would be pretty awesome. But, you know, I would bet it's probably difficult to find this guy. I mean, does he even have a publicist anymore? I mean, who knows?
We'll find out. And then we'll ask him questions as though he's Mr. Drummond for real. Like, ask him if he still lives in that awesome apartment.
If he still molests those children, like in the trailer.
No Dana Plato questions allowed. No questions about, or Todd Bridges' crime career.
Or even better, we can ask him questions as though he's the guy who played Punky Brewster's dad. What was his name? What's that guy's name? The one who was in Police Academy?
Or is Alex Karras as Webster's dad? Talk about what it's like playing for the Detroit Lions and getting into an acting career with the with the woman from Porky's.
Punky versus George Gaines.
George Gaines. There you go. Yeah, that guy. He's awesome.
And he was accomplished Broadway actor.
There you go again. He pulled a Conrad.
What about, like, Martin Landau in Space 1999? Or is that also before you guys' time?
That's before my time.
Yeah. That was, like, late 70s. Like, after Star Wars, they started making, like, these syndicated... Like, I guess when the first Battlestar Galactica came out also. You also had Buck Rogers in the 21st century, which is, you know... One of the great references you could ever make to anybody is find the right place to make a Tweaky reference.
Wasn't he that little robot?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So just incidentally, we still haven't gotten to what scared Jeff as a child.
That's true.
The only thing I can give you is I have a very vivid memory of having a nightmare this one time. And it probably isn't very scary or very funny. It's probably just kind of sad. But I had this terrible nightmare about a department store mannequin. I had this dream that I was in my room and my father showed up. My parents had split up, so he was visiting in this dream I had, and had brought this department store mannequin with him and just kind of propped it up in the corner of my room.
And said, this is your new mommy?
Yeah. He was it was wearing a black bodysuit, and it had no hair on it or anything, you know, no wig, just like it was waiting to be dressed or whatever. And in the dream, he left and left me there alone with the mannequin, and then it started to move, and then I woke up and I was all freaked out, and that is what that lingered for quite a while. Department store mannequins, no fun.
So when you went to the department store, you would be freaked out by the mannequins, by the other ones?
For a little bit, yeah.
Was it only when they were bald, or was it ones with hair as well? Did they have to be in a black bodysuit?
I don't think I've ever seen one in a black bodysuit. I think I was like 4 when I had this nightmare, so I would venture to guess that for a while department stores were probably not a very fun place to take me.
Did you ever think about suing the writers of the movie Mannequin for stealing
for all
your
kinds
idea,
of
for
reasons.
Stealing your
for a million reasons
for Meshach Taylor's career
for giving Starship another excuse to make music.
Yeah, I knew obviously we were going to go in the Mannequin direction.
Right, and I'm sorry for stealing your Meshach Taylor reference.
No,
you reference it in the email.
What was the last thing Meshach Taylor did?
Time.
In 1996.
Time.
He was wandering the same streets as Conrad Bain.
Yes, let's see. I gotta look him up.
Dinner theater reunion with the Designing Women cast. Dixie Carter's Laundry.
He was on Hannah Montana in 2008.
Oh my god.
In one episode. He's still doing stuff. Looks like he's doing kids TV and stuff like that. He was in Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide. I don't know what that is. It's a teen show.
That kind of makes sense for
Nick
him.
Show, Nickelodeon show.
You think so?
Yeah, because he's like, you know, I mean, you don't really need to act, and you know he's unthreatening in a way. I don't mean to say that like as you know, like for an African American guy, but you know I don't mean it like that. But I mean like he has a friendliness about him.
I've never given this much thought to this guy.
Me neither, but you know, it's just you know.
No, but yes, but thinking about it, I would agree.
It does make sense that he would be doing children stuff or preteen stuff, or voiceover. I'm sure he's done some voices for animated movies. I'm sure you'll see there.
It's funny how the Disney Channel has become a refuge for all these 80s.
Yeah, because they're people who saw these movies as kids, you know, like they're now parents, you know, and they could say, oh, this has that nice person from Designing Women on it, you know.
I was thinking about Robbie Neville specifically. That always cracks me up that he's writing music for you know, Disney starlets like Demi Lovato.
Right.
Matthew Wilder. I think we may have talked about that before, maybe even on a podcast, that Matthew Wilder has done. I know I discuss it in banter whenever we play Break My Stride at Acoustic AD shows. Yeah. That he writes for the Black Eyed Peas and stuff.
Yeah. I think I edited out of one of the shows.
Thank you.
I reviewed that Selena Gomez record, and a bunch of the songs were written by Gina Shock.
Really?
Okay.
I loved her in the Bangles.
Who, if people did.
But see, anything is better, you know, it's like, you think that, it's like, why would they do that? Then you think, it's, well, I guess it's better than having them live off the state.
That's right.
I'm willing to bet that Robbie Neville has all kinds of fucking money.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not from, like, C'est la vie royalties.
No, it's from, you know, Miley Cyrus or whatever.
Right.
He doesn't care.
Well, you gotta figure, Matthew Wilder, between production credits on the No Doubt album and the
yeah.
Puffy sample. The Puff Daddy.
Oh, the Mace. Right.
When they did Break My... when Was it Mace?
It was a Puff Daddy production, I think.
But
I think it was Mace on the track, I think.
Okay.
Can't Nobody Hold Me Down or something like that.
Right.
I'm going off memory here. I'm not Googling this, so yeah. I could be wrong. But, just post it. I'm going off memory here.
It should be on your iPod next to Humping Around.
No, I don't carry a lot of songs. Billboard. I don't carry any Billboard songs past 1992. That's my cutoff year, and just barely, because as I was going through the shuffle, this is when I was at the gym yesterday and just had 92 on shuffle. I was like, nope, not that song. Nope, not that song. Nope, not listening to that. Nope. What the fuck is this song? No, you know. Whereas 91, I'm like, oh yeah.
You sound like the Kool-Aid Man.
What? Why do I have the feeling like Jason was just making his O face at that point?
Oh yeah, Wholehearted.
I love that song. I'd forgotten all about that song. That's the extreme song I always forget about.
Why didn't you say so in the comments? Then I could have used more backup on Whole. Although I think the people who
you
wrote
a lot of backup on Wholehearted.
Yeah, a lot of people back that one up. That's a good song.
Yeah, as opposed to More Than Words, which is.
We could have a whole discussion about More Than Words. My wife hates that song with a passion. She violently hates that song. She hates it because I always thought it was a sweet ballad, and her argument is that it's some guy saying you have to have sex with me to show me that you love me.
Shut up and do me.
I think he's asking. Yeah, I think he's asking for a blowjob. I don't think he's asking for. I think it's much more specific than just.
That's
that.
Please Please Me by the Beatles is a guy asking.
Oh, please, please, love me two times.
Jeff, can you point to the thing in More Than Words specifically that makes you feel like it's about a blowjob and not just about sex?
Well, because she can't talk while she's doing it.
See, that's why I said. That's why I always shut up and do me. You don't have to talk.
I think Jeff just proved it for me.
But then he says, "Hold me close." So,
Maybe he meant hold my balls close to your chin. I can't believe I just
grabbed
went
my ass cheeks close.
Oh, this is taking such a dark turn.
Really? So I'll bring it back. So, really, mannequins? That was it, Jeff?
Yeah, that's it. That's the only thing I can remember. You know, scaring me.
Well, I have to say, Jeff, I'm a little disappointed with what scared you as a kid.
I'm sorry. So I'm kind of. I've been racking my brain ever since you guys picked this topic, trying to think of something, some damn thing that was supposed to scare me and did.
This one goes out to all our hipster fans. Thank you for listening to Popo's. You suckers, now fuck off.
And now it's time for our endorsement segment. I guess we didn't really come up with a name yet for this, did we?
I blame
nobody gave us
readers,
any suggestions.
The listeners,
yeah,
they didn't come up with anything. Popdos endorsements. That's the best I can come up with, and that's not very exciting.
Popdos readers, let us know what you think this segment should be called. Leave a comment in the show notes over on popdos.com, and we're going to start the endorsements with Jason.
Today I'm going to endorse the Guggenheim Grotto, who they're an Irish duo, and you know I'm not.
Your Irish accent sucks, by the way.
What are you talking about? Your Irish
you
accent.
You
going to
do
suck?
That the whole show. It slipped right
that
out.
That was
of it.
Well. I wasn't really going to. I just wanted
start calling you Kevin Costner.
No, I wasn't going to do that the whole show. But if you buy me the talk box, that by the way, if you buy me a talk box, and we should explain
Irish
the
accent talk box.
We should explain this to the listeners that Jeff very much wants to buy me a talk box and then just have me do the whole show speaking through a talk box.
Express your support for this idea in the comments, please.
This idea would get old so quickly. Like in the podcast, if everything I said was through a talk box. First of all, half the time you'd be like, what the hell is he saying? Because you have to hold that tube off the side of your mouth or whatever. You'd be like, you know, everything I said, you'd be like, I could only say things like, I agree.
Well, we already know what it's going to sound like because Jason always has these audio problems.
That's true.
That's what it sounds like through a talk box anyway.
Right. Sorry.
Like that's running through a talk box and an Echoplex.
Sorry. I apologize. But anyway, Guggenheim Grotto, you know, I'm when thinking about how to describe this band, you know, I'm unfortunately not very good at coming up with the right thing to say about the music that I like, except just, oh, it's so good, which is really, that's why I don't generally write CD reviews. I'm much better at writing stuff like, you know, Chart Attack and stuff where I can look at things from a pop culture standpoint and make fun of them, etc. But, so I actually went back to Jeff's review of Guggenheim Grotto's album, Happy the Man. I've got that.
I reviewed that?
Huh? You did, and I'm going to read what you said, because when I read it, I was like, God damn it, this is exactly why Jeff is so amazing. He can, like, completely boil this album down to, like, you know, or what's great about these guys in, like, 8 words. I hate you for it. But what he says about Happy the Man is he says, Jeff says, and I quote, I'm a douchebag who likes to drink a lot of bourbon. No, I'm just kidding. What Jeff says about Happy the Man is he says, it's an album of electronic-laced grown-up pop music, firmly grounded with acoustic guitars and harmonies and filled to the brim with graceful hooks and instantly memorable, partly cloudy melodies. Ugh. How do you learn to write a sentence? Teach me how to write a sentence like that. That is...
Oh, shut up. You're twice the writer of it.
No, shut up. seriously, I don't want to turn this into no, I love you, but seriously.
Oh, you are twice the writer.
It's a 66 right there.
That's not true. seriously, I wish I could write a sentence like that. But what he's saying is totally true. You know, they released their first album called Waltzing Alone, which was a more acoustic-based album, and that's a great album too. But I like really smart, peppy pop albums with good production and a lot of interesting instruments. And Happy the Man is totally that. Like you said, it's electronically grown-up pop music, and these guys. Also, like he says about, you know, these graceful hooks and instantly memorable, partly cloudy melodies. It's totally true. There's not a song on this album that hasn't been in my head and that I don't love. There's maybe one song that I think is kind of weak, but the rest of the album is fantastic. They've got these peppy songs like Fee Da Da Dee and Her Beautiful Ideas and a song called Sunshine Makes Me High. And then they have these really touching ballads. They've got this one called Lost Forever And, which I've now learned on piano and just totally gets me. And this other one called Heaven Has a Heart of Stone, which I think is about losing someone you love, presumably to some kind of sickness. It's obviously a very bleak song. Actually, Jessica was playing it in the car, and her mom was listening, and her mom made her turn it off. Because she thought it was so sad. She's like, "Oh, this is terrible." I mean, not in that kind of way. Her mom was just like, you know, referring to the lyrical content. It's a beautiful, beautiful album. I just saw Guggenheim Grotto last week. My wife and I went to see them. They should be so much bigger than they are. They should be huge, but instead they're playing these small venues. It's not huge audiences, but they're one of those bands. They're from Ireland, and they're really trying to make a name for themselves in the States. And one of the guys in the band, Mick Lynch, said that next year they're pretty much going to be in the U.S. and mostly the Northeast full-time for a lot of the year, trying to build themselves up. And they totally deserve more accolades than they're getting. So you'll obviously hear some of a song here on the podcast today, but go look them up. There are some free downloads on their website, guggenheimgrotto.com. They're fantastic, and if you get a chance to see them live, it's just the two of them. They don't have the other instruments, but the electronic songs or the more popular, fully produced songs, they've been able to distill those down to a guitar and a keyboard or a ukulele, and they're fantastic. I can't say enough about them, and at the same time, I can't say anything intelligent about them. So you can also I'll also include a link in the show notes to Jeff's review of the album. The result is an album that feels lighter than air but carries a weight that will linger after the final chord fades. Oh, fuck you, Jeff.
Basically, you're saying it's like a fart in a locker room.
Yes, exactly like a fart in a locker room. It is nothing like a fart in a locker room. It's like a fart in a locker room if the fart smelled really, really nice. Tip your hat to the willow tree, resigned to what it can and cannot be. Your hat to the willow tree, resigned to what it can and cannot ba be. And me, I think I'm getting there. Our heads are all home for the ghosts of alphabet. Our hearts are tigers chasing tiger nets.
And I'm going to recommend The Light in Darkness. It's an oral history of Bruce Springsteen's Darkest on the Edge of Town album and its subsequent tour. And it was written entirely by Bruce Springsteen fans. And there are a lot of great stories and pictures and scans of all sorts of tour memorabilia. The guy who compiled this, in full disclosure, his name is Lawrence Kirsch. He's a friend of mine. And I contributed an essay to the book on why the tour was so great and such a pivotal moment in Springsteen's career. And another member of the Pop Dos staff, Peter Cianca, he also wrote something for it. It's really beautifully put together, and it's a must-read for any Springsteen fan You can find it at thelightanddarkness.com. He did another book. Lawrence did another book a couple of years ago, which was How I Met Him. It was called For You. And this is every bit as good as that. And if you understand why darkness is such an important part of his career, it's like when he made the change from being, like, went from theaters to arenas, like, in the middle of that tour. And it's, you know, from which, of course, he's never looked back. And the thing that I wrote about it was why that tour worked so well. It was like the coming together of a bunch of events in his life that all pretty much played out. And if you have any of the bootlegs from those tours, you know that some of those shows are really, really unbelievable. For me, it's like the greatest rock and roll I've ever heard in my life. And it's a great book. If you know somebody who is a Springsteen fan, it's a fantastic gift, and I recommend it completely.
I think I'll get it for Jason.
only if you include with it a CD of the show at the Agora in Cleveland.
What happened to that show?
Oh, it's just the greatest rock and roll show I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, okay.
Jason can't get enough Springsteen.
Well, it's still racing down the trestles, but that blood had never burned in her veins. Now here she's got a house up in Fairview, in a style she's trying to maintain.
Matthew Ryan, one of my favorite artists, has a new record coming out on Tuesday. It's called Dear Lover, and that's my recommendation for this installment. If you're familiar with his music, you know that he tends to kind of alternate between more kind of raw, garagey stuff. His last record, Matthew Ryan Versus the Silver State, was, I think, actually literally recorded in a garage with a live band, and had a real raw feel to it. This is more the guitars are pretty gritty, but there's a lot of electronic stuff going on too. And you know, it's Matthew Ryan. I recommend all of his albums without reservation, but this new one is coming out on Tuesday, and I'd like to recommend the title track, Dear Lover.
Okay, have you ever heard do you remember, I think it was like 96, a guy by the name of Ben Vaughn did an album and recorded in his car?
Oh, wait, he does instrumental stuff.
Yeah, he did the theme for Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, I reviewed one of his records a couple of years ago. I don't think I heard the one. What's it called?
65 Rambler.
Yeah, no, I've never listened to the album itself, but I do know that he did.
It was just like really good roots rock, almost psychobilly, but not quite punk influenced. As that is.
I meant to check that out because I reviewed the instrumental thing that he did. I think it was kind of like almost Esquivel type music,
yeah.
A couple of years ago. I forgot all about it, so I need to check that out.
Yeah, in the liner notes, he's got a diagram of exactly how everything was set up. It was really cool. I don't remember it. I remember liking the album. A friend of mine had it. I didn't have it though. It was on Ryko, I think. But it's out of print now. I think I went looking for it a while ago. And that's going to do it for episode 2 of the Pop Dose podcast. Go to popdose.com every day for all the new content that we have up on a daily basis. Between now and the end of the year, we're going to list our favorite albums, songs, and movies of the past decade. It's hard to believe that the aughts are almost gone, so be sure to look for those when they're online. Again, the podcast is now available in iTunes, so please leave a review of the show there because it helps get the show more visibility. And you can also leave a comment in the show notes for this episode of anything you liked and didn't like. Jason and Jeff, anything else that you have to say?
Soup fuckers.
That's it. We'll see you guys in a month.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We might be fucked. We might be fucked.
Get Bobby Brown to come out to the Mohegan Sun for the Pop Goes Carnival.
I think that if we promised him just a little bit of money and maybe a little bit of Vicodin, I think that would be fine.
A plate of ribs.
Maybe I could get Bobby Brown to show up at my house. I'm sure I could.
It doesn't sound like a bad idea at all.
We hate you, Bobby Brown. In case you hadn't figured that out yet. You ruined her career.
You knew the girl ain't worth it with Jack Wagner.
With Jack Wagner.
Jack Wagner could pinch hit for Glenn Medeiros.
For Glenn Medeiros. Poor Glenn Medeiros would be like, what the fuck? What's Glenn Medeiros up to?
His ass in debt?